always, as translators, we're coming at a thing from the outside, right? We are, in a sense, we are the readers that the poem or the work was not supposed to have. We weren't supposed to have access to this literature, and we're giving it to people who weren't supposed to read it. It's a very strange kind of phenomenon that I've been thinking about quite a lot recently, that I'm kind of imagining Adam Mickiewicz being told that in 200 years, someone in America will be reading his work in English translation. I think he would have found it funny, amongst other things. But it's kind of our business. We're in the business of reading things that we shouldn't and sharing them with people who also shouldn't really be reading them. And I say shouldn't in a, you know, joking way. Don't hold me to that. But extending an audience beyond what might originally have been thought. And that's another reason for doing this. I think this poem has more to it than the Poles think. I think I read it differently than a Polish person would. I think American readers will, English language readers, will find different things in there. I don't necessarily know what they are, but it's, to me, translation, amongst many other things, is always an act of realizing that a text is in fact richer even than it seemed to be, that it has appeal beyond what one might originally have thought. I wanted to mention here just what I've called touchstones, so a couple of translations of epics that have been, I think, mostly just inspirations to me, not something that I necessarily wanted to copy, but translators who have shown that you can write, you can translate an epic and make it readable and memorable. So David Ferry's Gilgamesh is one example of this. Richmond Latimer's Iliad, Seamus Heaney's Beowulf, Robert Pinsky's Inferno, and the Metamorphoses, Ovid's Metamorphoses by Rolf Humphreys, all of which I'd highly recommend. So the next section is called Yes, Yes, and No, No's. I was just kind of messing around with these titles, honestly. And so here I wanted to talk about what I wanted to do and what I wanted to not do, things I wanted to include and things I wanted to exclude. So I did want regular word order. All of the other translations do inverted word order to fit the rhythm. And that just annoys me. It's just, it really doesn't feel right. I mean, there's, you know, one example when first the house he spied. You know, it's like we get it, but it doesn't roll off the tongue very well or roll off the mind. So none of those. I'm fine with elided forms, contractions, I'll, he'd, and so on. And a dialogue that sounds not natural, but naturalistic. You know, this sleight of hand that we have of making things look as if they could be spoken. So this meant mostly not using the word alas. Alas. I love the word alas. I mean, I actually sometimes say it, but it's so pretentious when I do. But then we have this great expression, too bad, you know? Too bad he wasn't there. And luckily can become good things. So lots of little tiny gestures like that. I spent more time than probably most people in this room wrestling with how to make things shorter. And rhyme as well. We'll talk about rhyme in a moment. But it was so wonderful when I did manage to find words where, for example, you know, self-possession is a really excellent word, but it has four syllables and it occupies a large part of a line. So let's go with poise. And that just seemed to be really right. Apiary, yeah. Actually, a couple of years ago, I was doing another translation and where I was really trying to use like Germanic rather than Latinate words, and the word, this guy kept bees, and so he had an apiary. And I'm like, you know, a Polish peasant is not going to have an apiary. And then I came across this really beautiful, I think, American expression, bee yard. And so I'm never going to say the word apiary ever again, actually.